Law and Grace, Chapter 9, Part B. The Nazarite Type of Israel. With what dismay the pious Israelite would realize that, try as he would to serve and please his God, there was no access to the altar possible for him. The stringency of the law admitted of no relaxation. God's words to Aaron were emphatic. Therefore thou and thy sons with thee shall keep your priest's office for everything of the altar and within the veil, and ye shall serve. I have given your priest's office unto you as a service of gift, and the stranger that cometh nigh shall be put to death. The fate of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram proved the folly of disregarding this divine mandate. What then had the law to say in encouragement of those who took the priestly status and privileges of the nation seriously and wished to realize them in terms of holiness of life? We have our answer in the Nazarite regulations. To appreciate these regulations, we need to recall certain matters affecting the Aaronic priesthood itself, or more exactly, affecting Aaron as its head and type. He was a full-time servant of his God, and as such, separate from other men, being especially holy to him. There were severe restrictions on his liberty of action. The Lord spake unto Aaron, saying, do not drink wine nor strong drink, thou nor thy sons with thee, when ye go into the tabernacle of the congregation, lest ye die. It shall be a statute forever throughout your generations, and that ye may put difference between holy and unholy, and between unclean and clean, and that ye may teach the children of Israel all the statutes which the Lord hath spoken unto them by the hand of Moses. If bereaved while serving in the sanctuary, he was not to leave it to contract defilement by the dead. Well, clearly, if he were in fact accidentally defiled by the dead, he was to be scrupulous in absenting himself from his ordinary duties while so defiled. For him and his sons, the rule was, they shall not make baldness upon their head, and they shall be holy unto their God. He was the crowned priest, distinguished by the crown of the anointing oil of his God upon him, and also upon the mitre, the golden plate, the holy crown. He was the embodiment of Israel's status as a kingdom of priests, and as such, the exemplar not only of his sons, but equally of all the pious men and women in Israel. How then could these men and women attain to his holiness and realize the ideal of self-consecration which he, in his official role, typified for them, seeing their lay status made any active assumption by them of priestly duties an impossibility? The law resolved their problem by arranging for the voluntary assumption by them of duties parallel with those of the high priest, the duties differing from his only slightly in nature and not at all in essence. The Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, when either man or woman shall separate themselves to vow a vow of a Nazarite to separate themselves unto the Lord, he shall separate himself from wine and strong drink, and shall drink no vinegar of wine or vinegar of strong drink, neither shall he drink any liquor of grapes, nor eat moist grapes or dried. All the days of his separation shall he eat nothing that is made of the vine tree, from the kernels even to the husk. All the days of the vow of his separation there shall no razor come upon his head, until the days be fulfilled in the which he separateth himself unto the Lord. He shall be holy, and shall let the locks of the hair of his head grow. All the days that he separateth himself unto the Lord, he shall come at no dead body. He shall not make himself unclean for his father, or for his mother, for his brother, or for his sister, when they die, because the consecration of his God is upon his head. The correspondence between the Nazarite and Aaron are too obvious to miss. In place of Aaron's mitre and crown, which he was disqualified as a layman from assuming, the Nazarite had a full growth of hair for crown and as a symbol of his consecrated separateness. During his separation, a shaven head would have been as unbecoming in him as in Aaron himself. As the priest, while ministering in the sanctuary, was forbidden to drink wine, so the Nazarite, while fulfilling his vow, was to abstain utterly from the fruit of the vine in any of its many forms. No defilement by death was permitted him. The law for him was as stringent as for Aaron in this respect. The principle of fundamental significance in the case of both Nazarite and Aaron was the same. All the days of his separation he is holy unto the Lord. And inferior though the Nazarite was as a layman to the anointed priest, yet in one way he was decidedly superior. Aaron was high priest as a matter of hereditary duty and not from choice. Not so the Nazarite. His consecration was essentially voluntary, a course of life and service willingly and cheerfully undertaken as an expression of his love for God and his desire to live in absolute holiness before him. The Nazarite laws, by virtue of their nature, could thus not envisage, far less countenance, a wanton breach of the vow of consecration. They had, however, perforce to legislate for an involuntary breach resulting from accidental and unavoidable defilement by death. That holiness of life, which the Nazarite's consecration symbolized on the one hand, and that moral corruption which death so fittingly typified on the other, were diametrically opposed to one another. Here then was an opportunity for the law to make this plain. The Nazarite was meant to be to every single member of the priestly people a living exhortation, an object lesson in holy living, an embodiment of the very notion of being an Israelite indeed, but so that he should serve also as a conspicuous object lesson in respect of the ravages of sin, and do so all the better because of what he was. The law then proceeded to declare that the defilement contracted by contact with death amounted in his case to an actual breach of his vow, even though completely accidental. Consequently, for him, much more was necessary than the routine 7 days exclusion from the camp and observance of the specified cleansing ritual which went with it. Once approach to the sanctuary became possible for him again, he had to make ritual confession that sin had disannulled his original consecration, and this he did by shaving off his hair, the badge of his separation, and the visible token of his vow. He had next to present an offering of two fowl, one for a sin offering and the other for a burnt offering. These atoned for his sin, for that he sinned by the dead. Numbers 6. And hallowed his head afresh. Yet even this did not suffice. He had lastly to make amends for the fact that the remaining days of the period of consecration to which his vow had committed him were lost to God. God had been deprived of his right to these days of service, robbed, as it were, of his due, even though the fault was not that of the Nazarite himself. One altar offering only was therefore appropriate in these circumstances and enabled the Nazarite to make public a vow that he had in this matter subjected God to loss, namely, a trespass offering. The fine of an added fifth was not calculable here in terms of cash, so the Nazarite suffered it by forfeiting instead the period of service which he already had to his credit when he contracted the defilement. Again in chapter 6 of Numbers, the days that were before shall be lost because his separation was defiled. He had therefore to fulfill not only that part of his period of consecration which in any case remained to him, but also the previous day's service thus lost to him. He had, in fact, to begin his entire consecration afresh. The lesson for every reflective Israelite was plain. Each time that by sinning he was forced to his status as one of a dynasty of priests, he had to begin afresh and make good his failure by consecrating himself anew to God. The lesson was a salutary one indeed, and a real education in acceptable worship. The Nazarite who successfully accomplished his vow had duly to present himself at the sanctuary with three unblemished offerings: sin offering, burnt offering, and peace offering. With them he was to bring unleavened bread and cakes as an accompaniment of the peace offering, and meal and drink offering as accompaniments both of the burnt offering and of the peace offering. Each of the offerings had to be offered in the usual significant order of succession, together with his meal offering and his drink offering. All this done, the time was now appropriate for the Nazarite's period of consecration to be officially declared complete. He therefore shaved off his hair and put it in the fire beneath the cauldrons in which the priest's portions of the peace offering were being stewed, in token of the fact that the realization of his vow had brought him true fellowship with God. After this, the Nazarite presumably left the court to eat those portions of the flesh which fell to him with the bread which he had brought. Bread, significantly, which, like that used in the service of consecration of the priests, was all unleavened. Not part unleavened and part leavened, as in the case of normal peace offering services, Leviticus 7. Before he did so, however, he had to acknowledge the reality of his need of the mediatorial ministrations of the priests to be as great as that of any other member of the priestly people. The priestly nature of his consecration was not to obscure in any way his dependence on the appointed priesthood. The priest shall take the sodden shoulder of the ram and one unleavened cake out of the basket, and one unleavened wafer, and shall put them upon the hands of the Nazarite after the hair of his separation is shaven, and the priest shall wave them for a wave offering before the Lord. This is holy for the priest with the wave breast and heave shoulder. In this way, the Nazarite confessed himself to stand in need not only of a priestly mediator as such, but also of a priestly mediator who was sinless, one whose whole life, not just a brief portion of it, would be holy and constitute the fullest and completest realization possible of the Nazarite ideal. After that, said the law significantly, the Nazarite may drink wine.